Jessica, and this is Peppa K Rambles, where a couple of friends review Korean dramas. And hello! Welcome back. This is technically the first episode of season 5, the first episode of 2024. And it's actually something totally different. I thought I'd kick off the season by finally doing that AMA that I promised I'd do at the end of 2023. So this episode is a solo pod. It's a mailbag episode. There is no guest. It's just me, and I'll be answering all of your burning questions that you've submitted via the socials at Daebak Pod. Now, I did want to intro this by saying that I so appreciate interacting with all of you. I love hearing from you guys. I love getting DMs, even voice messages from you guys. Fun fact, if you send me a voice message on Insta, I'll more than likely send a voice message back. Thank you for supporting the podcast, for supporting me on this journey. It's been so gratifying to build a community around Daebak, like around our love for dramas. And I know that sometimes it's really easy to forget that there's a real person behind all the drama content. So this episode is to sort of bridge the gap. It's kind of a reintroduction as much as it's for fans of the podcast. So without further ado, I'm just going to get right into it. I was initially going to say exactly who asked the question, but then I was like, I think I would just get tongue-tied reading out everyone's Insta handles and Twitter handles and whatever else. So I'm just going to say, oh, this next question, whatever. So you know who you are when you asked it. So thank you for asking your questions. I really appreciate it. So the first three questions, they all kind of have to do with the same thing. So they are all intro to me questions. How did you get into K-dramas? When and how did you start watching Asian dramas? Did you start with Korean dramas? So all these go hand in hand. So I'm just going to answer all of these three at the same time. This story starts in 2011 or 2012. I sort of use these years interchangeably just because I have like a shit memory. I never sat down and said, today I watched my first K-drama in my diary. Like, it never happened. So that's why I just say like, oh, 2012, 2011-ish. I had just graduated from college and I was living back home. And I had just started my first full-time job. I had suddenly all of this free time. I had nothing, like no tests to study for, no papers to write, no classes. So I would just come home from work and be like, what now? So also, I guess I should say, like, in college, I really broadened what I watched, my taste. I went to a small liberal arts college and I took like all kinds of classes and had friends from all over with varied interests. And I remember I had a friend who studied Mandarin. My roommate was a theater major. Like, another friend was a huge horror fan and made us all go to Halloween Horror Nights, which is a whole debacle in and of itself. Another friend was, she was really sweet and would crochet during our movie nights. And I still have a beanie that she made me. And I think, like any other young person, I was trying new things. I was very open and willing to try different experiences, whether it was food, movies, TV shows, music, etc. So I remember, let me just set the scene though, because despite me being open to watching new things, the TV shows that I remember watching around this time or like Glee. I remember vividly watching the pilot episode of Glee in my freshman dorm room. So yeah, there was that ABC Family show, Once Upon a Time. I remember watching season 1 and a little bit of season 2. I remember watching Lost with my family just as the last season of that was airing. I remember watching Walking Dead, which that premiered in 2010, I think. And oh my God, I was fully in love with Tom Welling from Smallville. I watched a smattering of CW shows as well, like Greek. But I personally can't say that I was truly married to Western television. Like, I wasn't like watching TV all the time. I was always just like a movie person. So the same summer that I started watching K-dramas, like, this is the chain of events. I started by binging... This is going to sound so stupid, but I started by binging True Blood. that raunchy, racy vampire show on HBO. So yeah. And it wasn't, I didn't even have HBO. Like, we didn't have HBO. It was on this, like, illegal site that I was, like, streaming it on. It was crazy. So I think of that time as sort of a fever dream. And then I watched a French movie on Netflix. And then the BBC Robin Hood show, also on Netflix, before Netflix figured out that I was watching stuff from all over, like global stuff. And it suggested that I watch the movie A Moment to Remember, which is a 2004 melodrama, obviously from Korea, starring Son Ye-jin and Jang Woo-sung. Yeah, so it was strange and just ridiculously sad. I loved it. Back then, you could rate movies and shows out of 5 stars on Netflix, which gave you really good suggestions from their algorithm. Now it's just up, thumbs up or thumbs down if you like it. But back then, I was like, 5 stars. So after that, after I rated that movie high on Netflix, that changed my life, because then Netflix started suggesting K-dramas, and it suggested that I watch Lie to Me, which is a 2011 K-drama starring Yoon Eun-hye and Kang Ji-won. I freaking loved it. Like, as soon after that, I watched Boys Over Flowers, which is addictive and tropey and toxic. And I mean, that was it. Like, the rest is history. And that's it. That's the full backstory of how I got into K-dramas, which is over a decade ago. So yeah. Next question. How many have you watched so far? Do you have your own personal list? How do you rate? Okay, so I looked at my drama list and I've watched 7 Taiwanese dramas, 215 Korean dramas, 41 Chinese dramas, and 8 Japanese dramas, for a total, as of today, of 271 Asian dramas total. I have also dropped, because I think this is important, 7 Taiwanese dramas, 42 Korean dramas, and 10 Chinese dramas. I thought that number would be more, but I guess not, because over time I just get more picky with what I watch. So do I have my own personal list? Yes, I just used my drama list. I used to keep a tiny notebook that I got for free from somewhere, and I would write down the dramas that I had watched, like the names of them. And I wish, before I had switched to my drama list, I had kept this going for a while, for a few years. And then for some god-awful reason, I threw it out. Why the hell I threw it out, I have no idea. I think I moved. And I was like, I don't need this anymore, like, whatever. And I threw it out. Ugh, I'm so mad I did, because I want to see in my own handwriting, like, all the dramas. Because by the time I switched to my drama list, I was just going off memory. Like, when I filled out my drama list on this one epic day, I was literally going year by year trying to figure out what I had watched from memory. So I'm sure that it's skewed. Like, this is probably different. What I'm saying is, it could be different. My drama list is as accurate as I could make it based on my memory. But I had a running tally of everything. What I used to do with that handwritten thing was I would write it down. If I highlighted it in blue, I really liked it. And if I put a star next to it, I freaking loved it. That was my old rating. So now I rate it. On the podcast, I rate it out of 5 soju bottles. I like to keep it 5 soju bottles because I've been using Letterboxd for years, which is a different app. And that's how I log all of the movies that I've watched in my entire life. And that is very accurate. That one I went through again. Like, there was several days that I went through every single year of release in Letterboxd and logged every single movie that I had watched and rated it. And now I keep it ongoing. Like, even rewatches, I'll say, like, I rewatched this on the 11th of December. So Letterboxd is extremely accurate. I think more accurate than my drama list account, as a matter of fact. So I log movies separate than dramas. And because Letterboxd is out of 5 stars and you can do half stars, that's kind of why I thought, oh, 5 soju bottles and you can do half bottles on Debaki Rambles, if that makes any sense. Like, how do I rate the drama? I think a lot of it has to do with how it made me feel, how I thought the plot went, how the writing was, vibes, how the acting was, if everything was well cast, the production value. Although I'm very forgiving with production value, to be quite honest with you. And then I think I also do rewatchability. In the back of my mind, I'm also like, would I recommend this and would I rewatch this? If the answers are both no, then my rating kind of dips. So that's in a nutshell how I rate things. Next question. How did you start podcasting? So I've been a podcaster since actually 2018, just not for K-dramas. So I'm sure many of you know, I said this before, I love movies and I co-host the movie podcast, Always the Critic, with my good friend Rico. Rico's been on the podcast several times. He was my exclusive co-host on season one. That's when I got the most bang for my buck. And I was like, you have to do this season with me, please. How did this all happen? Well, I'll tell you the story of Always a Critic. So back in 2018, there was this movie subscription service called MoviePass. You paid $10 a month and it allowed you to see as many movies as you possibly could in theaters. And so Rico and I had some friends and some of our friends had this MoviePass thing. We were seeing movies like you would not believe. We would just show. It was like Wednesday night, we'd show up. Thursday, we'd show up. Friday, it was nonstop. We were seeing movies. It was ridiculous. And Rico started his own podcast called the I Have a Movie Pass podcast. And he did a couple of episodes reviewing movies on his own solo pod. And then he invited, his brother Miguel, who's been on Tebak a few times as well. I'm sure you've heard Miguel. He was on the Glory episode. He was on 2521. He was on the J-Drama First Love episode with me as well. He's such a great drama friend. One of my first drama friends ever. So Miguel and Rico are brothers, if that makes any sense. So for I Have a Movie Pass podcast, Miguel was one of the first guests. And then they have a sister. So his Rico and Miguel's sister guested. And then Rico, of course, started tapping our friends group to guest on movie reviews with him. And I guested on the Deadpool 2 review. It was so much fun. It felt like an extension of conversations that we were already having, you know, just very natural. So Rico asked me back the next few reviews until finally he like just stopped asking. and that was it. I was his co-host. And when MoviePass crashed and burned because that was just not a sustainable business strategy, we renamed the movie podcast to Always the Critic. So now, how does Tebak fit in? So I started the Tebak blog in 2017 directly as a result of how bad The Bride of Habeck was. That is a show starring Nam Joo Hyuk. And I needed a place to vent. And I thought, why not just write down my thoughts and set up a blog just as sort of like a review diary? And if someone reads it, then great. If not, this is for me. So the blog was started in 2017. And I called it Tebak K-Rambles. Like TV reviews or something like that. But it was always Tebak K-Rambles. So come early 2021, I decided to look at the blog numbers for once. And I was kind of shocked at how many people came to the site to read the Tebak K-Rambles blog. So I went to Rico and said, like, look, there's a market for this. Like, think of it like, I don't remember the show. I think it might be Arrested Development, that meme where it's just like a conspiracy wall and the guy is like like looking crazy and is trying to tell, you know, whoever about, you know, what the findings, like what's going on. And this is how I came to Rico. I was like, look, there's a market for this. People really want to hear about the K-dramas. Like, maybe we could try doing one season of a Tebak K-Rambles podcast. Like, what do you say? And I swear, I must have looked like a crazy person. So that's how it happened. Like, even though it's not his thing, Rico said, sure. And I went nuts creating a logo, setting up the socials, designing posts, and just getting immersed in the K-drama community, which I just had never been a part of in any real capacity up until that point. So quickly, quickly I found that I loved it. I love talking to people about what many would consider like a guilty pleasure, something so odd that is watching television shows not from your culture in a different language, reading subtitles. And the podcast and the social aspect of it has been a really fulfilling part for me. You know, it's just been really fulfilling for me. So thanks again. And next question, where are you from exactly and how old are you? So I was born and raised in South Florida, and most people don't recognize the names of the towns. So I often just say I'm from Miami. The place I'm from is halfway between Fort Lauderdale and Miami. I have since moved away. So I now live in Central Florida in a magical city known for theme parks and bad traffic, Orlando. The legit only thing I miss about Miami is the food, because you cannot get good food. Well, good authentic Cuban food. That is the only thing that you really can't get outside of Miami / South Florida. That's a fact. I will not be taking questions on that. If the question meant, what is your ethnicity? Then I'm half Cuban and half Puerto Rican. And then because I said when I graduated, you could probably do the math, but I'm 32. I forget that I'm 32 all the time. I feel like I'm still in my 20s mentally, and it's really jarring that I pay taxes and have a mortgage. So there's that. Next question. How do you think the K-drama scene of this year, 2023, do you think of any reasons that make a certain year more exciting than others? I've been watching the old K-dramas for this year. So this is a great question. It's a little weird to be answering this question 2 months into 2024, but that's because I decided to save this AMA late for later instead of releasing it at the end of 2023. So that's on me, not on this person. I actually guested on two vastly different podcast episodes wrapping up the year 2023 in Asian dramas. So if you want to check those out, by all means, I highly recommend it. I was on Tea and Soju podcast with the drama trio for an end of the year wrap up episode. And then I was also on Carol's K-drama musings podcast. I think it was like 2023, the year in dramas. That's what that episode was called. So here's in a nutshell, I personally don't consider 2023 a good drama year for me. There were around like 114 K-dramas released in 2023. It's always around that number, sometimes more, sometimes a little less. I personally completed just 12. 12. I dropped two dramas, and right now I'm only mildly interested in starting like 13 dramas from 2023. When that will happen, anyone's guess. I don't know. I think the quality of dramas went down. I think the consistency that drew me into dramas is nowhere to be found. Instead of like 16 or 20 episodes, we're getting dramas with all kinds of runtimes, you know, 50, 55, hour, 10 minutes, hour and a half, all kinds of episode counts. 12 episodes is becoming increasingly common. So is having multiple seasons, which I think is a direct result of Netflix intervention and money. To me, the trope that was overplayed in 2023 was past life / time travel. It was too much. And honestly, the trope wouldn't bother me so much if the quality wasn't an issue. I feel like other than a few shows, the rest are so forgettable. So forgettable. Like overall, other than a handful of shows, the bulk of 2023 shows are so forgettable. And that's a problem. You asked any reasons that make a certain year more exciting than others. And I think it has to do with how memorable shows are. Even if I don't particularly like a show, I feel like if it had an impact on the collective, on the zeitgeist, if people were moved in some way, shape, or form, and I'm left with like a visceral reaction to it, then I think it counts as being memorable and contributing to the overall excitement for a given year. Like people, myself included, love to talk about the year 2016. And it's because even after all this time, 8 years now, that year was like a renaissance for K-dramas in terms of both quality and how memorable the shows are. And by comparison, in just a couple of months, I'm left with a small list of shows for 2023. I can count them on one hand that made 2023 what it was. It's The Glory, Moving, and My Dearest. The rest will be lost to time. Like, you'll bring them up in conversation and best of lists and go, oh yeah, that's right, Crash Course and Romance came out that year too. It makes 2023 look embarrassing. It looks unremarkable. So that's my thoughts. that's the end of that question. Next up, what's your watching system? Do you have a life outside Asian drama? So I'm sorry, I started laughing. Let me read that again. What's your watching system? Do you have a life outside Asian dramas? My watching system is really simple. I'm usually a bit of a mood watcher, an impulse watcher. I see things on different platforms and read the synopsis, look at the cast, check a trailer if there is one, and make a decision on the spot. I rarely succumb to peer pressure, so to speak, or FOMO. During the podcast season, my watch system is not so fluid. With a few exceptions, I plan everything out and stick to the shows that I've picked, which is like a combo of what I think people want to hear about, shows that seem interesting and have enough stuff to talk about on a podcast, and requests from all of you guys. So that, I hope that answers that question. Do I have a life outside of Asian dramas? Absolutely. I've said this on other podcasts. I am not constantly watching Asian dramas. I love them. I do. But sometimes I get burnt out, or I watch a few duds in a row and I get kind of turned off by them, or just life happens. So I go through seasons of watching a ton of dramas and seasons of watching next to no dramas at all. And it's been years of this, on and off, of just like, I'd rather watch movies, I'd rather like read a book, I'd rather, you know, things happen and I just don't have the time or what have you. And it just like trickles in where I'm watching a drama, and then sometimes it's like a flood or a waterfall and I'm like watching tons of dramas. So it just depends. And that's why I guess my watch, like my totals that I said at the beginning, are not so inflated. Like, it's not thousands of dramas. You know what I'm saying? So to follow that up, I do work full time. I've had this conversation with people in my DMs. Like, people think I'm a full time content creator. I am not a full time content creator. It's kind of flattering to think that the amount and maybe quality of content that I produce would make you think that this is all I do, but absolutely not. Because I host Always a Critic, I just got in the habit of watching most new theatrical releases. So most weekends I'm at the movies. I watch movies at home throughout the week. I hang out with friends. I go thrifting. I love working on home projects. If the mood strikes, I visit my parents. I'm really close with my family. And that is all like built into my life along with watching dramas. So yeah, work full time, regular person, go out to eat. It's all there. So next question, what are some of your K-drama pet peeves? My example, female lead who wears her hair down all the time. Yeah, that would bother me too. So some of my K-drama pet peeves are different, like some are tropes and some are not. So the biggest one is the met as children trope. I just dislike it so much. I think it's so lazy. And it's such a Korean thing too, that this fated mates thing, that they met when they were children and they had some sort of connection and inyeon or whatever, and they're gonna like circle back on it later. And it's like most dramas, it is so rare that they do this well where I'm like, oh wow, yeah, like it was so needed. But usually I'm like, they had such a strong connection even before we found out that they met as children, and they could have just stuck with that. So I'm almost never in favor of it. I think it's just so overdone. Disapproving and overbearing parents. This is another part where I'm Hispanic. I understand to some extent, like disapproving and overbearing parents, but like it gets to a point where I'm like, oh my God, enough. Sudden illness / amnesia. This is one that's going like by the wayside. You don't see this that often anymore. But what you do see is a surprise car crash. This hasn't gone anywhere. I still dislike getting run over by the white truck of doom. I think it's a joke at this point. I find it a joke. It's never in earnest that I'm like, wow, they got run over by a white truck. Like, it is never serious to me. I think it's a joke at this point. The main couple break up in one of the final episodes due to some like contrived reason. I hate the reasons too. Like, it'll be like cliche, like if you love someone, let them go, or they're better off without me, or even like an ex-lover coming back into the picture, like get a hold of yourself. I think it's really cheap. So I hate that as well. Whenever it happens, I'm like, nails on a chalkboard. Ugly Duckling is another, like, because I love makeovers, but I don't like that we're all tiptoeing around the fact that this isn't a stunning person in glasses. Like, are you joking? Like, that the Ugly Duckling thing never works. So I just don't think it works. I think they think we're stupid. So yeah, it's just never done right. Back pats, like when they pat someone on the back to comfort them, that to me is like not very comforting. In my culture, that's not necessarily very comforting. Like, just give them a really strong bear hug. You know what I'm saying? Hold them until they need, you know, like that's it. Not like a little back pat. It seems like they're a dog. Like, it makes me think, oh, that's what I do to a dog. Like, you pat a dog, not a person. So back pats, it might be a cultural thing, but to this day, I'm like, nope. And then it depends, but almost always this product placement gets me in a frenzy, and it's Subway product placement, because it's fucking Subway. Are you out of your mind? So those are some of my K-drama pet peeves. There are probably many more, but those are just some that I came up with on the spot when I was answering this question. Next up, your top. So this person gave me some serious ass homework, and I'm really upset with them. And I know who they are, but I won't name them. Your top 10 dramas, K-dramas, C-dramas, Hagooks, anything / everything, and a little happy face emoji. That is not very nice to do to me, because I don't like ranking dramas like this, pitting them against each other, especially like between crossing genres and stuff. Like, what? This was very difficult. This was so difficult for me. But I did it for you. This ended up being a very personalized list. And I ended up not ranking them. I just put 10 together and I was like, these are 10, not in any particular order. Okay. So here's my top 10 K-dramas on this particular day. And it's specific to me. This is not like trying to be objective. This is completely subjective. Okay. Don't come for me. I don't really want to argue about these. Okay. Here they are. 2521, Goblin, The Red Sleeve, Happiness, Splash Splash Love, which is like a mini K-drama. I think it's only 2 episodes. Move to Heaven, The Princess's Man, Our Beloved Summer, Coffee Prince, 9 End, 2 Outs, which is an older drama. It's a friends to lovers. It's one of the best. All right. I did have some runner-ups, so I'll name them just, you know, to be well-rounded here. But those were my top 10. I made cuts. These are the cuts. The Glory, My Dearest, Moving Healer, The Crowned Clown, Cruel City, which is a noir, Tomorrow With You, because this is my first life, and Cain and Abel. All right. Top 10 C dramas. This is a lot easier to pull together. So we have Love Like the Galaxy, Till the End of the Moon, Eternal Love, aka 10 Miles of Peach Blossoms, Love Between Fairy and Devil. And I got to be honest, these are my top four and they're in order. The rest, I cannot put them in order. Reset, Story of Kunning Palace, Hidden Love, The Starry Love, Who Rules the World, The Romance of Tiger and Rose, Goodbye My Princess, and Unrequited Love. If you counted correctly, I added two more bonus in there. So there's actually 12 on this top 10. All right, top 10 Sahguks. We have, and this, the top five are actually ranked. So you're welcome. My Dearest, Mr. Sunshine, The Red Sleeve, The Princess's Man, and The Crowned Clown. Here's the rest. And I'll give you two extra ones as well. So it'll be 12 shows. 100 Days My Prince, Kingdom, Love in the Moonlight, Moon Embracing the Sun, Rookie Historian Gu Haeryong, Ruler, The Master of the Mask, and The Forbidden Marriage. So those are some really good sahguks if you want some. And don't ask me to do that again. Okay, next question. What's the longest binge session you've ever had? Hashtag team no sleep. I'm pretty bad at noting down when I binge and for how long, but I'm honestly not that bad. I don't do well when I don't get sleep. So there's stories of me going on family vacations and having to get on flights at like 6 a.m. and doing full days. Like right when we land, we do a full day at our destination and just losing my mind. So I have a history. I like my sleep. Worst binge sesh has to be like a half a day or something. Like definitely less than 24 hours. When I lived alone, there were quite a few weekends where I would just shut away and did like a Friday night into Saturday. So maybe 7 p.m. Friday to like 6 or 7 a.m. Saturday morning. Then I'd finally go to sleep, would be out of commission until later on that day, like get up, I don't know, pick up sushi and then come back home to watch some more. But I would never do back-to-back giant binge sessions like that. On a consistent basis, like this is normal, on a consistent basis, like Monday through Friday, I can realistically do 7 p.m. to midnight or a little later. So that's 5 hours straight. But as I've said, I'm trying to get to bed at a reasonable time now and set better habits for myself. So going to bed at 1, 2, 3 a.m. is like becoming a thing of the past. It's just I'm doing that way less, almost never now. So great question. Another three best underrated dramas is the next question. Three best underrated dramas. So I gave you, I did 12 underrated dramas. Here they are. And they're all from all genres. The Crowned Clown, Signal for supernatural / crime thriller, Cruel City for a crime noir, Do You Like Brahms? It's a romance. Because This Is My First Life, also a slice of life / romance, I'm Not a Robot, It's Okay, That's Love, King Two Hearts, Love All Play, Temperature of Love, The Forbidden Marriage, and Tomorrow with You. So you asked for three, I gave you 12 because that's like torturing me to only do three. Any dramas? Oh, this is the next question. Any dramas you wish another actor / actress played the lead role instead? Okay. At first, nothing came to mind here. But then I just thought of every Chaonu drama and every Song Kang drama. I think at this point, there's got to be some hot-ass ace actor who can actually act, who's just actually this person has to be fed up with trying to go for these same parts that are likely just being given to these two actors. I feel terrible for this hypothetical person I know is out there. For actresses, maybe I'll throw Moon Ka-young out there from True Beauty. Of course, Bae Suzy. I'll throw her into the proverbial bus as well. So I do not want to stick around to catch some bullets on this. So next question. A trope you love in dramas when done right and some dramas that did it well. This was really difficult because I didn't have an easy time picking the trope that I loved, because I feel like as long as it's written right, it's written right. Like it'll work. So the tropes that I picked were Nuna romance, sudden amnesia, and rich man, poor woman. So here's some good Nuna romances. You know, it was done right and I liked it. So When the Camellia Blooms, Don't Hate Me, Something in the Rain, Temperature of Love, and Reply 1988. Reply 1988 is an ensemble cast with lots of different stories. It is extremely long. Each episode's like an hour and a half, 2 hours or something. So there is only one storyline that has the Nuna romance. For Something in the Rain, beware of that last half of the show. It's a doozy. But that Nuna romance is extremely special and magical. So I think when you just zero in on the Nuna romances, all these shows do really well. Sudden Amnesia, I have Cain and Abel, 100 Days My Prince, The Moon That Embraces the Sun, Autumn's Concerto, which is a Taiwanese drama, and The Innocent Man with Song Joong-ki as well, which is a bit of an older drama, but I remember really liking it. It was a mukbang, I believe, but I was like eating it up. And then the last trope I picked was rich man, poor woman. And this is like a dime a dozen. Like you could throw a rock and you'll hit a rich man, poor woman show in K-drama. But these ones did it really well. I like them. It's not supposed to be a very serious trope or a story. So these ones I think are fun. Coffee Prince, Secret Garden, Cinderella and the Four Knights, Bride of the Century, Business Proposal, I'm Not a Robot, Goblin, and So I Married an Antifan. All right, next question. Can you do a list of recommended C-drama only on Netflix or Viki? Okay, recommended C-drama, so Chinese dramas only on Netflix or Viki. I can, but just FYI, like this is the biggest caveat. I am in the state. I'm located in the United States. So if you are outside of the States, in Canada or wherever else, you might have different stuff available on your Netflix or Viki because of licensing or whatever else. Like that just is always the case. Things that are available here might not be available where you are. Plus, things change all the time on Netflix and Viki. Licensing deals expire and things get taken off Netflix and Viki all the time. So just beware of it. Like this is as of today in the United States in February of 2024. This is what is available on Netflix and Viki for me. And the next caveat that I want to state is I have not watched every single C drama. I've said this before on other podcasts, but like I tend to ration my C-dramas because I have so many that I want to watch that are interesting to me that it's almost like when I have nothing else to watch, I'm like, oh my God, I can dip into this C-drama well and watch something that I've been wanting to watch that I know that people have been recommending to me, that people are passionate about. And like I almost know that I'm going to enjoy. So it's almost exponential how many C-dramas I have not watched and have on my watch list. So please, like, bear with me. I have separated this list into, like, things that I've watched and things that I haven't watched but I would feel comfortable recommending because I also, like, have had this recommended to me and am planning on watching it at some point. So here we go. On Netflix, these are modern C-dramas, like present-day C-dramas. They're not historicals. Hidden Love, I Hear You with Zhao Luxi. I thought it was cute. Not bad. Meteor Garden, obviously a remake with Dylan Wang. Unrequited Love from 2019. Hear me on this. Don't watch the later one. Watch the Unrequited Love that aired in 2019. And then I also have Autumn's Concerto, which is a Taiwanese drama. And hear me on this. Y'all are going to want to watch Autumn's Concerto because it's coming up soon on season 5. And then for costume dramas or historicals, I have Princess Wei Young, which we just did a podcast review on the drama trio over on Tea and Soju. That was a lot of fun. Love Between Fairy and Devil, which is also available on Viki. Who Rules the World? Word of Honor, which is a BL that people love to recommend to me. Eternal Love, which is also available on Viki. And The Untamed, which is also available on Viki. It's a BL, and we covered it in season 4 of Taebak. I will go out on a limb and recommend it because people love to recommend The Untamed. I'm not going to stop you from having a good time if you want to get in on it. But I personally did not like The Untamed. All right. Viki, C-dramas. These are the ones that I have watched. Personally have watched. Reset. For Reset, it's 15 episodes. It's Groundhog Day meets Speed. We just did an episode on it on Tea and Soju with the drama trio. Till the End of the Moon, covered it in season 4 of Taebak. I adore it. The Romance of Tiger and Rose, covered it on the Patreon feed. Love Like the Galaxy, also did an episode on it in season 4. The Starry Love, guested on Tea and Soju with Liliana and reviewed that one. Ashes of Love, Eternal Love, which I just mentioned prior, aka 10 Miles of Peach Blossoms. Goodbye My Princess is on Viki. It'll Break Your Heart. It's an unhappy ending, but I mean, I freaking loved it. So, and then Maid's Revenge for Shits and Gigs. Maid's Revenge is not a serious show. It's just not. You'll see what I mean when you just even look at it. All right. And then this is the list of shows that I would recommend on Viki that I have yet to watch. Here we go. The Long Ballad, because we'll be covering it on season 5 shortly, in a few episodes or so. You'll see it come up on season 5. Meet Yourself, again, we'll be covering it on season 5. It'll be fun. Amidst a Snowstorm of Love with Wu Lei. I have yet to watch it, but it comes very highly recommended from all my drama besties. It is not a historical. It's a modern day drama. More vibes than plot, it seems. But if that's your thing, then by all means. The Love You Give Me, Lighter and Princess, Nothing But You, also with Wu Lei. Go Ahead, Immortal Samsara. That is a Xianxia, Nirvana and Fire, and that's it. Those are all of my recs. There are so many more C dramas on these on Viki, especially. Not really that many on Netflix, but holy shit, Viki is bursting with Chinese dramas. So if at any point you want more recommendations, please reach out. That's just the tip of the iceberg. And obviously, Viki's going to have a lot more recommendations as well and playlists and all kinds of things. Next question. Favorite actors. Is this my last question? No, it's not. Okay. Favorite actors and actresses that you look forward to in their next projects. Okay. For male actors, I guess this is, this is how I interpreted the question to me. Like, these are actors and actresses that you love, you follow closely, and you love to see them, and you are excited to watch them in their next projects. You know what I'm saying? So that's how he took it to me. For male actors, I chose Choi Woo-shik. He's kind of quickly becoming a favorite of mine. I loved him in Our Beloved Summer. I loved him in The Witch, The Subversion Part 1, which is a movie. Loved him in Parasite, obviously, which is, you know, Best Picture. Wia Jun is up and coming, and I really liked him in Little Women and Squid Game. Lee Jae-in, I loved him in Move to Heaven, Signal, Tomorrow with You. I personally love him as an actor. But I think my two favorites that I'm kind of like, oh, I should definitely give most of their things a shot, even though I don't. Like, I'll get to this after, but the names are Chung Hae-in from DP and Something in the Rain and One Spring Night and Connect, and Nam Joo Hyuk from 2521, Startup and Weightlifting Fairy, just to name a few of his projects. Everybody has flops, okay? Like, every actor and actress will have flops and will have questionable things on their filmography. So I never expect every project to be perfect. That being said, like, I kind of I know when people are good, when actors are good, I kind of like, oh, I pay a little bit more attention to them. And it's not that I'll press play on every single thing. And if I do, if it's bad, I'm not going to continue watching. Like, that's out of the question. I will never continue watching a bad show, even if my fave is in it. So just a little about me. Female actors, it's a much shorter list. But actually, it's not that short. But I have Song Hye Kyo, I have Jung So Min, Kim Go Eun, and IU. I love them. Song Hye Kyo, I didn't put the shows, but Song Hye Kyo is from Descendants of the Sun and The Glory. Jung So Min is from Alchemy of Souls Season 1. And Because This Is My First Life, among other things. Kim Go Eun, obviously Goblin, Goblin's Bride, Little Women. IU, Moon Lovers, Hotel Del Luna. What else has IU been in? Ooh, Dream High. And then, of course, my favorite, like, I do have a favorite female actor. It's Han Hyo-joo. Han Hyo-joo. Han Hyo-joo. I want to be her when I grow up. I think she's so cool. I love her so much. And I think she's done such a great job at picking projects. I think she's so choosy. And I think she's varied up her resume a lot. And I just, like, I have such a girl crush on Han Hyo-joo. So that's my number one. Even I have more passion for Han Hyo-joo than I do for, like, any of the other names that I've mentioned, truly. Okay, this might be my last question. Yes, okay. Last question that you guys have submitted to me. What are your most anticipated K-dramas coming out in 2024? So I don't have that many because I just don't. But the two that I have are Mom's Friend's Son, starring Jung So Min and Jung Hyun, which are the two names that I just mentioned on my faves list. So here's the synopsis of the show. Choi Sung Hyo, which is Jung Hyun's character, is the most noteworthy young architect in Korea, and he runs the Architecture Atelier Inn, is the name of it. Not only is he nearly perfect as an architect, but he is also very attractive and has a great personality. Yet, Choi Sung Hyo has experienced moments that he wants to erase from his life. Those moments usually involve Bae Seok-ryo. When they were 4 years old, their moms became friends. Because of their moms, Choi Sung-hyo and Bae Seok-ryo spend a lot of time together, like bathing together at a women's bathhouse. Now, Choi Sung-hyo meets Bae Seok-ryo as adults. While growing up, Bae Seok-ryo's life was smooth sailing. During her school days, she never missed ranking first academically at her school. She was always passionate and energetic with things she did. After graduating from a university, she got hired by a large company. She works hard as a project manager, but for some reason, she quit her job. She has been unemployed since then. She meets Choi Sung-hyo. So this is like two childhood frenemies like meeting up again, and their moms are besties. And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally in. And I love those two actors. I'm so ready to see Jung Hyun in a rom-com type situation. And he has expressed that he wants to do this type of project. He doesn't want to play a freaking military man anymore. He doesn't want to play a cop anymore. And I'm like, baby, I'm here. I'm in your corner. So I'm really excited for that. And the second show that I'm excited for, and I hope it does come out this year because I think it was slated for last year and it never ended up airing, it's called Ask the Stars, starring Lee Min-ho and Kong Hyo-jin. So it's also, I think the English title is When the Stars Gossip. And the synopsis reads, set in a space station and on Earth, a romance takes place between Korean OBGYN Gong Ryong, that's Lee Min-ho's character, and Korean-American astronaut Eve Kim, that's Kong Hyo-jin's character. Yeah, that sounds so cool. And the visual, like, they have a screen still that's floating around, and I'm like, Bro, give me that fucking sci-fi romance. Give it to me right now. So I'm excited for that. I hope it's good because I freaking love Kong Hyo-jin. And Lee Min-ho, like, as much as people like to shit on him, like, this is not his typical bag. Like, he's not typecast in this at all. He's playing an OBGYN in space. What am I supposed to do with this? I need to see it. So that's what I'm excited for. So that's it. That's it. Those are all of your questions. I want to thank you guys again for providing all of these wonderful questions and difficult asks and a lot of homework for me. But one last thing, I've asked this of myself so that you guys have a bit of a heads up. But what is up next for season 5? Well, I actually built this season a little differently. My personal goal for this year and the vision for season 5 is to only watch shows that I personally want to watch. I'd rather not get burnt out covering what's trending or watching shows I'm not truly interested in. So that's exactly what I did. I'm covering shows that are young and old, just as I started doing in season 4. I'm covering shows from a bunch of different countries. Like, it's K-dramas, C-dramas. I've got a Taiwanese drama on the docket. I've even got a J-drama. I'm reviewing shows that I've watched before and also never watched in my life. I'm watching shows that you might have heard of and some that you might not have heard of at all. But all of them are shows that I personally wanted to watch. They've been in my queue, on my watch list. They piqued my interest. They were recommended to me forever ago. And some were even requested by you guys, my wonderful K-Ramblers. And I hope that you enjoy. I hope that you enjoy the ride. But yeah, that's it. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. It's just getting started. And that's it. That's our show. I'm Jessica, and this has been the Taebak K-Ramblers podcast.